In the past, as I recall, as a listener, there was always a Q&A, some listener comment period on the financial issues. Can we steal 15 minutes from today or tomorrow for questions specifically on the finances?
You mean questions
only
from the listeners, from the listeners to the CFO?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any problem with that?
Bob?
Well, we have another public comment period scheduled, I think maybe in about an hour, so
right.
I think that could be open to whatever questions, comments, listeners, or staff want to make.
Well, just because some people may have to leave, I was going to suggest 15 minutes only on this topic and then 45 minutes and an hour, perhaps.
I really think, I mean, we have public comment scheduled for the within the next agenda item. We've had public comment at 11:30 for about 45 minutes. And I think we need to make sure that we do get some of our business done so that the public has something to comment about. So, Lisa, are you presenting the committee to investigate, et cetera?
I'm one of the people that will be talking about
it.
Right, I'm one of them.
You can go ahead.
Right.
What happened to
First of all, I want to say that the word do I have the floor? Am I close enough now? The word presentation is not really an accurate word. We heard a lot of public comment early this morning. We know the things that we're hearing throughout the network, and we know that issues involving racism and diversity are very, very serious issues. So one of the things that this committee to investigate allegations of racism and sexism thought would be very helpful is if when we had this conversation that we also opened it up to include some of the work from other committees in which there might be overlap, such as committees of inclusion, and also to have some discussion about the race and nationality policy. Before going forward, I just want to say that I must really commend the people who have worked on this committee with me. Sometimes we've had political differences, but the amount of sensitivity and seriousness and thought and integrity and sense of fairness in which everybody who has been involved with this committee has proceeded has been greatly, greatly beneficial and very helpful. So I just want to appreciate and also recognize the other members on the committee and Evelyn Bethune to my left, A.C. Byrd, Sara Brandawa, I can just hear the talking a little bit, Sara Brandawa, Laurie Taguma, who is one of the affiliate directors, who is not here today, but she was reelected. She is coming back to the board. I want to also thank Lydia Brazon, who is one of the directors who chose not to run again for reelection, so she was on the outgoing board, and another one of the directors who sat on the board in 2006, Rosalinda Palacios. They were very instrumental in their work with this committee. I've passed out certain packets. You'll notice that there's a committee report. There is also a report about one of the motions that we did pass going forward, and another report called Foreclosed, State of the Dream, 2008. I handed out. This report is actually 50-something pages, so I just made a copy of the first few pages. But I think it's important to just start with a couple of statistics because when we have this conversation, we have to understand that we're not operating in a vacuum, and the impact that this issue has on people's lives is tremendous. I'm just going to read a couple of statistics and then go forward with the rest of the report on the committee, and then definitely I would love to hear from the other board members and we can open this up. And I will ask that Robert's rules of order be suspended just a little bit because I think it's important to really have a conversation about this from people and even from members of the audience. So this report, again, it's called Foreclosed. And as we know that we are in a real serious state in terms of foreclosures and what that has meant. But of course, it is going to affect various communities much more differently than it will affect others. This report came from the United for a Fair Economy. They do a lot of reports in terms of the financial impact that certain social issues have on various communities. But key findings, They estimate that the total loss of wealth for people of color to be between $164 billion and $213 billion for the subprime loans taken during the past 8 years. They believe that this represents the greatest loss of wealth for people of color in modern U.S. history. Another statistic. Based on improvements in median household net worth before the current crisis from 1982 to 2004, it would take 594 more years for blacks/African Americans to achieve parity with whites. The current crisis is likely to make it take much longer. Home ownership for the rates of blacks and African/African Americans compared to whites already starting to take back recent gains. At the current rate of improvement from 1970 to 2006, parity will not be achieved for another 5,423 years. There's also statistics in here in terms of how this has impacted Latino people and other various communities of color, but I just wanted to at least start with those few statistics. So it is so important to understand when we talk about these issues, we're not talking in a vacuum. Just to begin a moment with one of the major mandates of the Pacifica Foundation, and I'll just read this very briefly, is that the foundation is to engage in any activity that shall contribute to a lasting understanding between nations and between individuals of all nations, races, creeds, and colors, to gather and disseminate information on the causes of conflict between any and all of such groups and through any and all means compatible with the purposes of this foundation, to promote the study of political and economic problems and the causes of religious, philosophical, and racial antagonisms. W.E.B. Du Bois wrote that the problem of the 20th century is the color line, and yet we know that has been the problem of every century since the inception of America, or people coming to, the Europeans coming to this land. And we certainly know that it's also the problem of the 21st century. This century finds us facing a resurgence in noose hangings, burnings. There have been church burnings. We know that there are issues pertaining to border issues, and always they mean the Mexican border. They never mean the Canadian border. And we know that there have been serious repercussions on people's lives. We know that NAFTA has affected and began to just create a crisis of such huge proportions, in which people, we always say people are running into this country, but we never talk about why somebody would choose to leave their homeland and to risk coming into this country to work for peanuts because of the economic crisis. And we also know that we also have started this century with a war in the Middle East, which, believe you me, are also affecting other people of color. We heard a lot of comment this morning, and I don't have to tell people about the crises that WBAI is facing, but not just WBAI, it's throughout the network. And we have learned this much, that although we talk about, oh, we're progressive and we're this and we're that, we are not separate from the community that we preach to or that we broadcast to. We are that community. And we bring to it all of the problems, all of the reflections, all of the antagonisms that's in the community at whole. We are a microcosm. This committee has some interesting history. And it was founded based on, well, you can get a sense of why it was founded this morning, but it was established, it's called the Committee to Investigate Allegations of Racism and Sexism, and it was established with part of it to be that mission. And the very fact, I could be mistaken, but I don't know if any other committee was met with as much scrutiny and debate as this committee was. And I'm just being very honest, and oftentimes the debate and the support of it ran across the color line. And some of the things that were said about it, and I just want to be clear, when this committee was established, there's no individual's name that was attached to it, although there were reasons there were reasons in terms of why it came into being, but there was no names attached to it in the motion. And yet it has not investigated anyone at all. There has been no investigations brought before it, and that's primarily because it's not fully set up in terms of processes, which is another reason why we felt it was so important to have this discussion. And yet it has been compared to HUAC, which stands for the House Un-American Activities Committee, PUAC, the Salem Witch Hunt, and just the irony of being compared to those events is that not one person of color that I know of had anything to do with those events when they happened in history. When we were first, just in terms of getting to the report, we were established in 2006. We were not able to have very many meetings because initially there was a move to rescind the committee, and then the battle existed throughout the year. Yeah, there was a motion that was put forward after the motion passed to establish, and at the next meeting there was a motion calling for its rescission. But so primarily a good part of that year in terms of the committee, we were not able to meet very much. But we eventually, most of it was about, campaigning for the establishment of the committee to keep it in existence. But there were some very, very critical things that came out of the debate surrounding that committee. And I believe in other members on the board who know more than I do, please feel free to correct me. But one of the things was we had some of the first anti-racism training for board members of, directors on the board. And we had a training in New York with the People's Institute, and we had, not in that order, I don't think, and we had one in Los Angeles that involved Dr. Shirley Better. And, so there were some very good things came out of those very serious discussions. And also the board recognized that there was a need to put a line item in the budget for training for board members for various reasons. Happily to report, in 2007, we were able to meet with a lot more regularity, and we did achieve consensus at most of those meetings. And again, the effort in terms of working with my fellow committee members was really, really very, very important. Some of the things that we were able to do, we passed this recommendation, and this is in the packet that I passed out with you, but a recommendation for a code of conduct as it pertains to issues of racism and sexism. And we submitted that I don't think that the governance board, and this is not to at all point fingers at any committee, but just to have real conversations about some of the impediments that we might be facing in terms of, the work that we're trying to do. So we did pass that as a recommendation for the governance committee to incorporate in the code of conduct. And, we're still waiting for a code of conduct to be passed. And perhaps we'll hear more about what's going on with that. Another thing that we did, a really rough draft guideline was presented to the committee. I don't even want to give the illusion that it's something that there's like unified consensus around, but this is just to inform, to report. But that there was, a rough draft set of guidelines that was put forward for consideration in terms of processes in terms of how this committee should be set up and should be established. And, there's been some discussion about it, but we're nowhere near consensus on it. It shows that we still have a lot of work, a lot of research to do in this area. But I would say that for the most part, most of the discussion with the committee really centered around really having an in-depth understanding, not just settling for passing some motion or saying, well, we put this into effect, but really, really trying to help to move the board or help to find ways to move the board, to move the Pacifica, because this motion primarily deals with behavior as it pertains to board members, local and the national board, and how to really help to move this network and people on the board, ourselves included, toward a very profound understanding of what this issue of racism is and the role and the part that we all have to play in it and the self-examination that is required and the maturity and the honesty that it takes to really talk about this, not just preach it, but to talk about it and to examine it. And so the issue of training was a very much a large part of the discussions that we had. We talked about the possibility of online training, but not as a substitute for in-person training or workshops, nothing like that, but in terms of just as an addendum to, so to speak. Some of the people, one of the problems with this, with doing this kind of work, is that you don't really have, in my opinion, a whole lot of concrete examples in society that you can look to and say, oh, well, they did it and they were so great and boom, we can borrow from this. You really don't have a whole lot of that. And with the new structure of Pacifica, there's also not a whole lot of structure in place when it comes to certain kind of things. So we're starting almost in a vacuum in that respect. But there are some institutions or some foundations that have started doing some tremendous work in anti-racism training, and we've been looking at some of them. One of them is the People's Institute. I know Evelyn has been, and I'm so sorry because the name escapes me, but I will ask Evelyn to speak about some of the foundations that she has worked with. And we had put forward a proposal because we said, well, we need to start again with more anti-racism training, and not just anti-racism, but also issues of sexism. And we were thinking about, we had put the proposal initially for it to be starting with the first in-person meeting and in New York for various reasons. And one of the institutions that we were looking at is the People's Institute, one of the institutions that conducted the anti-racism training in 2006. And for various reasons, not the least being that there has been so much, you know, controversy and so many of the elections in terms of the directors at the time when we put forward this motion was not really settled. And because, you know, you have a new board coming in, there's a whole lot of training, we thought that, the time would be better served to maybe have the training a little later on in the year, maybe at the next in-person board meeting, but to use this meeting to talk about, to have a real dialogue about some of the issues we are facing and also some of the impediments, so to speak, that has come up with our work on the committee. And just to get into some of the challenges or impediments that we have faced, the word investigation, because that brought up a whole lot of things, but you have to look at this. Earlier today, somebody said that I said something to this person when he approached me in Newark, and I don't run away from statements I've made or positions that I've taken on racism, and I take very strong ones. And he was correct with what he said, but it's what's important about this is to understand it doesn't happen in a vacuum. So when we talked about the word investigate, it was about how do we really get down to the bottom of what happened. If somebody says, so-and-so accused me of doing this, and if they say it's because of racism, well, we have to talk about it. And we have to look at patterns, and we have to do those kind of things. So toward being able to establish something like that, it's important to have very, very fair processes in place. It's important to work with the HR director. We certainly don't, although the scope of this committee pertains to board members, but we certainly don't want to do anything that would be in violation of the manual with our HR manual throughout Pacifica, or certainly anything that would be in violation with workplace laws. So that was very important to work with the HR director. And initially in 2006, Yolanda Thomas, I think that was her last name, she was the HR director for Pacifica in 2006, and she was more than willing to work with us. But at the end of the year, or either at the beginning of 2007, she left the foundation for various reasons. And so we have not really had we have an HR consultant, but we really don't have an HR director in place that we could say, look, we want to work with you and talk with you, and how can you help us, you know, monitor these kind of things. And there's also been various changes in terms of the executive director positions, but these are all things in terms of the foundation that we think, you know, working with these people and certainly working with Foundation Council, and Dan has certainly expressed interest in working with us. But these are some of the things that have presented, I'll say, impediments somewhat to really establishing the guidelines, because everybody is so concerned, and rightfully so, within the committee with process and with fairness. But again, it's beyond far more than process and fairness. It is also about helping to move these conversations to a level where they really need to go, and helping to really just deal realistically and forthrightfully with the things that are going on, and, you know, and they're serious. And at this point, I will ask some of the other committee members if they would like to comment and to maybe talk about some of the work and the things that they have been doing as well, or whatever they might like to add to this.
I guess I can start off. I just want to very briefly say that when the committee got together, one of the first things that we decided was that this was not about punitive or punishment. This committee was put together in order to really address the very serious issues of racism and sexism that present themselves within every meeting, within every signal area. There are always instances of racist behavior, prejudicial behavior, bigoted behavior, all kinds of things. And one of the things that I believe very strongly is that sometimes things are done out of ignorance, and sometimes it's willfully done. In order to make sure which one you're dealing with, you educate your people. And you do that by having workshops and giving people information so that they then operate within a context of being informed. And if behavior continues, then you can erase, you can decide that it's willful. Because once people understand and know better, the expectation, of course, is that they will do better. So if that behavior doesn't change, then you know that it is a willful act, and you can address it in that manner. We have a lot of issues within Pacifica that deal with lawsuits because of sometimes people not being trained properly, not getting the HR piece, those kinds of things. What we have done at KPFT is actively, as an LSB, use money that we received through a grant for board training to address those issues. We've had a board retreat just this past, this month, in fact, to deal with the issues of healing racism. And the Center for Healing Racism conducted the workshop. It was for 2 days because it's also not a topic that you can deal with in an hour. It's an ongoing process, and you're not going to straighten it out in a two-day workshop. But what you hope is that people come away with a sense of understanding the dynamic of the effect that racism has on not just the person that's on the receiving end, but also on the person who's doing the act or committing the act, because it affects both parties. And it affects this entire country in terms of how people of color are able to live their life every day and how devalued people are on a day-to-day basis, willfully in many cases, and how institutionalized racism is. And until we understand the depth of that, we really cannot speak to whether I'm a racist, a bigot, prejudiced, whether you are, or whatever. We have to really understand the paradigm that within the American culture, racism is an integral part of everyday life, period. And the denial of that is what makes us unable to communicate. And so what I believe this board has agreed to do is ongoing training, because you have to build on, you don't want to just have one workshop. We've talked about making sure that our trainings are connected and that they build on each other so that it's ongoing. And so that is what has come out of this committee over the last year and a half, 2 years, as this committee has really tried to not be an instrument for punitive attacks, which is what I believe people viewed it as initially, but a vehicle to really talk about the importance of putting tools in place that can be utilized across the network to help heal a very deep, gaping wound that affects us and prevents us from being able to operate at our highest level.
I will next call on A.C. Byrd, who has a long history in fighting civil rights and fighting for civil rights, I should say. He's out of WPFW. A.C., would you like to?
Well, first of all, I just wanted to, as the other members of the committee has cited, and that is the I want to appreciate and thank the Pacifica Foundation for adopting this committee, because it was a clear recognition that these kinds of isms has existed and paralyzed America for a long time. It's been 88 years ago. There was no women did not have rights that we now address. And I would say, since while we had some limited forms of that in the 1860s for African Americans, but in the main, it was 1964 and 1965 that we got the Voting Rights, both the Civil Rights and Voting Rights Act. So there's been adjustments in U.S. society to try to address these questions. And we're all a part of that society, and so it's no accident that we needed to address this question ourselves. And I think the one thing that I want to say is that I think objectively we have to understand that we live in a culture that's permeated by racism and sexism. It's nothing that's in individual heads, except that we are influenced by that. We're all influenced by that. I, as an African American, need to be educated on the question of sexism. And the larger society need to be educated on racism. I mean, it's just, it permeates and is structured within society. And I think it would be an illusion to assume that you don't manifest it. I used to think that I didn't manifest it, but then I learned through struggle that I do. right, exactly. Took me a while. thanks to the struggling progressive women's movement.
I made it clear.
And so I think it was a commendable thing by this foundation to do this. And I would hope that we all would understand very clearly that we need this kind of training if we're going to be agents of social change. I think what Pacifica mission lays out is the fact that they wanted to establish an institution that would address the issues of social change on the issue of racism, sexism, and other issues that it addressed. And so I think it's very important that we have adopted this. And I want to thank the committee itself, and particularly Lisa, who is our president, chair of this committee, who has done a very wonderful job, and all of its members have done a wonderful job in doing so. I have to say, as a political animal, that looking at this election, we see that people who have been considered progressive, far beyond their scope, is now engaged in a race-baiting strategy to win the elections, namely Bill and Hillary Clinton. And so we can see that it continues to manifest itself. We can't even talk about the Bush administration. We know they unashamedly just, practice racism all the time. As a sport, almost. So that's all I want to say. I just want to say that I hope we continue this and continue the training, as Lisa has pointed out, and that because I think if we're going to be an agent of social change, if that's our choice, then we have to educate ourselves before we can help educate the public. And in some instances, we got to learn from the public. It's a dialectical kind of thing. And so let's continue working on that. And I think we've already mandated in this board that we would try to have it, this discussion at every meeting, have some form of training. For money reasons and other reasons, we haven't had a program like Lisa mentioned in New York and Evelyn and them had in Texas. But I think we ought to pay attention to this and try to make sure that there's room on the program wherever we have these events, in-person meetings, that we engage in this discussion so we can better ourselves and become an agent of change. Thank you.
I'm also going to ask Saul Brandauer, who was he was the vice chair last year. He's kind of in limbo right now. I don't know how to address him, but he was the vice chair last year of the board, and he finished out as the chair. And I would like to – he's from KPFA. Yeah.
Thank you, Lisa. I think that the time that I've spent here on this committee has been probably one of the most productive undertaking that I have encountered here for a long time. Fully well knowing and to deal with something so substantial an issue that's embedded in the psyche of this country and is manifested at levels that we don't even comprehend, and then to try to come and educate ourselves and make ourselves sensitive to such an issue at a deeper level so that we can move forward as a collective body, it's a tremendous undertaking. First of all, to begin with, there's no matter what rules, what kind of philosophical arguments you put forth, there's always a counter one to that. So those who have experienced a deep legacy of injustice in a nation over a long period of time, to fully well appreciate, on my behalf or anybody else who have not seen or encountered such a deep kind of legacy, it's not very easy. So sometimes we just overlook it. Sometimes we are insensitive to things we do and words we utter and not fully realizing what the impact of that is. And then to on top of that, how do you go about correcting it? Whether, I think Dr. Batun said that being punitive, that's not going to solve it, and I agree. I think that it's kind of a question of raising our consciousness to a point where that punitive element does not enter into the picture. I think that's only then I think we can elevate ourselves and our whole network to a level where, you know, we become utterly sensitive to other people's historical events that have created where they are. So for me, it has been a growing experience on this committee itself, and then to we try to come up with some kind of common elements that could be put into our governance committee and under code of conduct. What kind of how do we approach it, and how do we try to cover that in a generalized sort of a way in the code of conduct? It's tremendous undertaking. So, but we'll try. I think our governance committee this coming year hopefully will address that element of it, the racism and sexism part of it. Also, it will try to hopefully come up with some kind of training program that will address these issues. All I got to say is that I myself am educating to this and making myself aware and conscious of some things that I do and I say and not fully realizing its impact, and I'll try to develop my own sensitivity towards that. So I think for me it's been a learning experience on this committee. Thank you.
Okay. Lisa, can I raise an issue about the agenda here? This item was originally scheduled for 2 hours, and I don't want to cut it down to 45 minutes. I think that we need to extend it, but we have some matters that we do have to take care of now that are time sensitive. First, we have public comment included in this item, so I'm proposing that be started at 5 p.m. and go to 5:30. And then at 5:30, we have an immediate concern that we need to deal with in closed session. So after the public comment, then we need to clear the room, have a closed session for 1 half hour, then we'll open up the doors and we'll hold our officer elections. And then
break for dinner, and then we can come back to this at probably 7:30.
Oh, sure. What time is it now?
It's 4:57.
4:57. Okay. I mean, that's fine with me. I mean, we can go to, you know, public comment now, and then...
Oh, it's a day. Oh no!
Yes,
wait a minute. It's worse than I thought. I think we may need to go into executive session immediately, because a member has to leave at 6, and this will be vital for her to participate in the election of officers. And then I think we may have to have public comment. Should we resume after?
Sure.
Okay. Resume after and have public comment afterwards so that everybody doesn't.
May I just ask one question in point of clarity? Because it was a public comment, I mean, I'm open, but was it supposed to be comment that was incorporated into this?
It was. Yes, it was agendized to be part of this item, but we can extend this item.
No, I'm for coming back, but I was just going to make a suggestion in terms of how we could possibly do it to incorporate public comment, but to just, you know, make it more like conversation and dialogue. But we can definitely break
down. Okay. All right. I'm very sorry. We have an immediate concern. We do need to go into a closed session, and it's vital because some of our members are leaving. Thank you very much.
We'll come back
at... well, I think at 7. At 7 o'clock, we'll come back. But the open session, we'll have open session at 5:30, and then we'll break for dinner, and then we'll come back and we'll have public comment at 7 o'clock. Okay, we're going into closed session now for 1/2 hour. At 5:30, we will have an open session for approximately 1/2 hour. Then we'll break for dinner, and then we'll come back and have public comment at 7.
That's correct.